WTF is Retail, presented by Excellent Zephyr, your ERP, integration, and automation specialists.
All right, guys, welcome back to WTF is Retail. Today we're joined by John Hoyle, the CEO and founder of flexible pop-up rental company Sook. For those of you who don't know, Sook will be sponsoring season two, so we've decided not to hold back and start season two off with a bang. Welcome in, John, to your own store in Shoreditch.
Great. Lovely to be here with you guys.
Thank you very much. So we'll jump straight into it. To get some context for our listeners, where does Sook fit into the retail ecosystem?
So, I'm a landlord by background, and to me, it kind of seemed obvious that big asset managers aren't able to engage with the huge spectrum of occupancy that exists in retail. We've all been down high streets in the UK and the developed world, and it's the same old brands time and time again. And that's because landlords are really comfortable with a like 10-year model with big brands. But that excludes all sorts of other users that are not necessarily within the retail space or are maybe online brands that don't have a physical space but want to activate at the right times of the year for them. So we operate in that gap in the market, giving an asset management tool that allows landlords to make more money out of empty spaces, but also giving brands an agile platform to use physical space on terms that are more appropriate for retail of the future.
Awesome. And does Sook just provide the space, or are you involved with, for example, the design behind, which we've been able to use? How far can they go when using your services?
Yeah, so we're a full service offer. You can't just create an Airbnb for retail and hope it's going to work because it's clunkier. There's people, there's brand, there's staff, there's fulfillment. Mm-hmm. So we have a super cool tool that you can see here, which you can self-serve and easily make the space look exactly as you want it to using digital content. We've got a furniture solution, an audio solution, a lighting solution. So it's super easy to make a space quickly look and feel like yours. But we also provide all of the other services that make retail fly. So we can help you with that content. We can staff the space for you. We can do your fulfillment. We can put a whole strategy around your activation if that's what you need. And we've seen a surge of interest in brands who want to use physical space, but only want to use it in ways that work for them. And that's, I think, what's driving our success.
Absolutely.
And you kind of said here that you fill this kind of unique hole within the market, within the retail market. Where was this idea exactly born? Obviously, you have history being a landlord. Like, when did you see, specifically with retail, that there was an opening for you to go in there and try and kind of take control of that for yourself?
Well, I saw one side of the opportunity because I was just frustrated as a landlord at the essentially inefficiency. You know, we're about 15% vacancy in the UK. It's not acceptable, is it, to let assets sit and rot when people want to use them? So I understood that that opportunity could be addressed by changing the rules of engagement between landlords. But what I've learned subsequently and didn't necessarily understand in the same way as I understood the landlord piece was that brands don't want to be in spaces for a decade either. It's really hard to keep your brand relevant 365 days of the year. And that's, you know, why really no one needs a shop 7 days a week. Even from Monday to Saturday, you got your peaks and troughs. And if you think about it seasonally, a lot of shops are just loss leaders for the majority of the time they're open. So with that in mind, and the landlords needing a solution for this big vacancy problem, it seemed obvious to try and bring those two problems together and disrupt what is a really resistant sector, both on the retail side and the landlord side. They don't want to change. They're really established. The reason it's such a huge $1 trillion sector is because it's grown over many years and is really mature. But that makes it tougher to change attitudes. But we're at the forefront of doing that.
Yeah, really interesting. And something I did find interesting when I was doing a little bit of research on Sook is, correct me if I'm wrong, but 2019 is when it was founded, right?
Yep.
See, I found that interesting in two ways, because that was just before the pandemic. Okay. How did that affect Sook? Did it affect it in a positive way, a negative way? Because when I was thinking about this internally, I could think of positives, how you could benefit, and I was thinking how it could have been difficult for you.
Yeah. Well, a bit of both. So, and actually, the problems of the pandemic persist, and you could argue that we're in a just as difficult a market today as we were during lockdown. So, I mean, we were a much smaller team. Our burn rate was much smaller. And what the pandemic did for us is it made landlords, who at that stage were the people that were really driving our success, more receptive to the idea of taking risk on our behalf, because they were panicking that they were never going to be able to fill their shops. Mm. But that panic was a bit late in the day. I mean, 10 years ago, UK real estate was at 12% vacancy. So it's not like the pandemic suddenly driven vacancy through the roof. It's just landlords have suddenly thought, we better do something about this because it's going to get worse. And what the pandemic also did, along with the now, I mean, don't forget, we've existed through the pandemic, through Boris Johnson, through the aftershocks of Brexit, through Liz Truss, and now a cost of living crisis with a, you know, global sort of liquidity shortage. Mm. What that is doing is making brands in particular reassess the way they do things. Like, we're in an agile world and the pandemic changed the way we thought about online. People don't want to commit to 10 years anywhere. Like, we don't even know what the future of work looks like. Why would you take a bet on a shop in a place that might exist in some sort of form today, but based on the world that we live in and we've all seen with our own eyes over the last few years, could be completely different. And so that's what we're facilitating. And that's really a huge opportunity. It's quite radical, can be quite hard to get investors to buy into that, because as I've learned, investors like copying existing successes with a tweak rather than actually following really radical game changers.
Because that's safer.
It's safer. Yeah. You know, the word venture and capital, a bit of an anomaly. They really aren't that up for risk.
Yeah.
There's sort of challenges there. But I think we sit really at the forefront of the huge opportunity to change the way that retail's operated for like the last 30 or 40 years. Because both sides of the coin are like, okay, this is interesting and we've got to do something different. And there's more retail online than there ever. I mean, there's more retail in the world than there ever has been before. It's just a lot of it's online. And all those guys, 40% of them want to be in physical space just on different terms. And that's why we exist.
Well, you've actually segued really nicely into my next question. It's like you knew the question somehow, but, you know, like you just said, the pandemic fueled this big e-commerce boom. Everyone knows that. And now it's this post-pandemic world, be it, you know, whether it's a cost of living crisis or whatever, we're after the pandemic now. Are you seeing more retailers kind of looking to adapt that omni-channel approach? Like, what's your view on that, these e-commerce retailers trying to get into the in-store space?
Well, sentiment lurches from one way to the next. I mean, look at like the Peloton journey. Oh, Peloton's the biggest business in the world. Oh, Peloton's tanking. You know, I wish humans were a bit more balanced, but we are seeing, you know, lots of different lurches in terms of the way we approach retail. Oh, everything's going to go online in pandemic hold on a minute. The DTC model doesn't work. And oh, crikey, it is expensive to get noticed online. Maybe I need to think about physical space. So we're there for anyone to use us in whatever way they see fit. And we're finding that that actually the explosion in e-commerce is brilliant for us because we're a home for them to engage in all sorts of different ways. And we're bringing in all of the tools that are at that forefront of the intersection of the digital and physical customer experience. You know, live streaming, the ability to engage with physical product or humans in real life and then still purchase it via, you know, online. Mm. You've got a QR code set up for your podcast here today. Yeah. Well, look, everyone's on board with that, which they weren't pre-pandemic. Why do people need to leave shops with bags of stuff? Mm. They don't. Can you take stock out of the equation? One of the huge inefficiencies of physical retail. Can you create a fit out that doesn't go in the bin? Well, that's what we've done.
Yep.
So all sorts of ESG goals that this big cumbersome world needed, frankly, a little bit of a moment like the pandemic to get us all thinking differently. And we hope to, you know, I think we can be up to 30, this model can be up to 30% of the way you engage with physical space in the future.
Interesting. And you mentioned sort of ways you can drive e-commerce traffic through in-store and vice versa, I guess. How important do you see that being? Like, we do integration on the tech side, but it really is this whole approach to making sure that there's cohesion between your in-store and your online offering. How important is that?
Massively.
Yeah.
And it works both ways. I mean, we did a really interesting live stream activation in our Inca site, which is IKEA and Hammersmith, LG and TikTok live streaming tellies. You know, like, with apologies to LG, not necessarily the most exciting product, but they saw a 65% increase in GMV by blending live streaming and physical retail, because, you know, there's nothing that drives interest in a space like a queue or some sort of activity. It's the old nightclub trick. Make sure there's a queue outside. People want to go in. So if you can blend the two, you get a more authentic experience for the people viewing online. You get a more interesting experience for the people in real life. And that together gives you a more effectively entrenched customer journey, which allows you to make a sale in all sorts of different ways. So, you know, there's not a linear approach to selling. I think this is worth saying, but, you know, the way physical retail has worked for decades is find out how much footfall is walking past a store, do a calculation on what the peel-off rate of that footfall is and what the price point of your product is, do some maths about whether that works or not, and then bet on a 5 to 10 year lease, and then be like a massive trawler net for people in real life. And what we're saying is basically that's deeply inefficient. You can probably achieve the same goals in about 20% of the time if you think about it in a cute way. You can also drive delight and activation and FOMO by not being there the whole time. Because if I know the shop I want to go to is there for 10 years, what was the incentive to go and see it? If I know it's activating in an interesting way with a deal, maybe someone, an influencer that I'm interested in, then I'll go. And so that's why we are driving such enormous levels of footfall. Brilliant example, this weekend in Southampton. So over the Easter period, Raspberry Pi went to Southampton. They've got a big following of kind of middle-aged men like me, but it's as powerful as like a big TikTok or a Depopper. People come to see them.
Yeah, and they've got lines out the door, like you said.
They've got no presence in Southampton, so them arriving is a big deal. And my inspiration, weirdly, for this is a library truck on the Isle of Bute, which is an island off Scotland. I was there for a wedding and the library truck was there, you know, books, boring, very analog, right, in today's world of tech. And the people of the Isle of Bute were queuing to get into the library truck. And it just goes around the Western Isles of Scotland providing books. And I was like, you know, you can get people excited anywhere. And the biggest brands in the world have got customers everywhere. So serve those customers rather than having to get on a plane or a train or a car and come to London or Manchester to get that unique experience. Suddenly, a location that you would never consider having a store is actually a really interesting place to do an activation.
So are you finding that some of the brands that you work with are kind of, I'm going to relate to this in music terms, are using you as like a vessel for like touring and entering different parts of the country? So they might do a shop here in London, but then they might go to Southampton, Edinburgh and use you to do that.
Yep, it's how TikTok are using us, how Depop are using us, how Raspberry Pi are using us. We've had a big nationwide tour by Hydrafacial, beauty brand. We're doing quite a lot of stuff with football clubs now. Now, they've all been hometown specific to date. So Southampton, Hearts in Edinburgh. But I mean, this hasn't happened yet, but I like the idea that traveling fans can have a reference point. So Chelsea go to Manchester, the Trafford Centre has a Chelsea space in Manchester. Might get rocks thrown at it, but you know what I mean? Why not serve specific hyper-local activations at the right time?
And I have found with that football thing, just going to Barcelona, is that at the start of the season or certain parts of the season, the store is absolutely heaving because the new shirts come out, everyone's pumped. But then it's kind of midway through the season, it's always dead. There's not anyone in there.
No one, I mean, I said it already, but no one needs a shop 7 days a week, and certainly practically no one needs a shop 365 days a year. And you know, every brand has its Christmas, and those Christmases are all at different times, and it's better for the landlord if you blend those Christmases so it's always busy, because it generates more income, and you don't have a customer in terms of an occupier who's like, oh, this is expensive and it's a ball ache and it's costing me loads of money and I've got loads of stock sitting on the shelves that I'm not gonna sell. So yeah, absolutely, can we drive that agile retail approach where we are effectively the outsourced real estate arm for brands and blend that with all of the stuff that you would normally have around, you know, shop windows. I mean, I don't want it to get too ranty, but, you know, I to go back to that piece around for footfall trailing, you know, so much time and energy has been spent on shop windows, right? And I just think that is completely missing the point, right? Trying to get a 0.5% more peel off rate from working people in and spend a fortune by employing some designer to make your window amazing, unless it's Fortnum & Mason, just isn't really worth it. Of course, you need to think about visual merchandising and it not be crap. But by activating and driving FOMO, you can achieve much more engagement than any window dressing ever would.
Absolutely. That's really interesting, actually, because in a previous episode last season, we were talking with Chris Brown from ex-Ted Baker, and he was talking about the importance of that, particularly when they were building Ted Baker, of the windows, how important that was for them, how cool they had to make it to get that 0.5% maybe, and how that drove everything. But now, and we'll be sharing videos of the space today, it is simple. You know, you're not relying on someone looking at the window here thinking, oh, I need to go into that shop just because I'm walking past. Mm. You've done the groundwork previously on website, through socials, and that's what's really going to get you in. So yeah, I think that's really, really unique. Talking about, you know, future and potential ways that Sukk can be used, but also bricks and mortar stores in general, where do you see it going? And not necessarily just in a pop-up space. Physical retail, is it dying? Is it growing? Is it going to make the comeback?
Yeah, so there is always going to be a place for physical retail. People love it. It's mm-hmm. a place to congregate. You know, it's one of the most enjoyable experiences where a lot of our kind of life stories are formed. And of course, there is also amenity retail. And I sat in front of the Association for Convenience Stores and said, no one needs a shop 7 days a week. And of course, they all laughed at me because they really do.
Yeah.
They are a distribution point for stuff. And, you know, the whole Gorillas model that sort of soared high in terms of 15-minute delivery is now crashed. So there's going to be even more need for amenity. So without doubt, physical retail will contract. I think the days of the vanilla high street are going to wane. So there was a period of time where what would happen is you would launch a successful, I don't know, 3-store business plan. A private equity group would take a look at it and say, well, the unit economics of this work, so let's scale you. Mm-hmm. And the way they'd scale it is they'd go to landlords and say, we'll take a 10-year lease off you, but you've got to give us £500,000 up front to fit the place out, and probably spent 250 of that, and 250 went into the business. And the quid pro quo for the landlord was you'd pay £5 per square foot more in year 10. And the landlords love that because that's what they value their buildings off, which is all they really care about. And of course, the private equity guys try and sell the business in year 7. So they're long gone before the rent is punitive. Yeah. That racket has existed for a long time. There's been obviously some extreme examples with really greedy people who have now discredited, who have effectively been the captains of the retail sector for like the early 2000s. That's over. So how are brands going to scale now? And do they want to do it using physical space? And so, that, you know, as I say, that's why we're betting on the fact that we can actually serve people's needs in physical space in a much more agile way. I think, you know, there are still going to be brands that are successful. I mean, it's one of the highest incidences in business failure is in retail brands, right? There is a constant churn. So you kind of wonder why anyone goes into it. And part of the reason a lot of them fail is because the real estate model doesn't support them. You know, the landlords are like, see ya. And if you don't pay the rent, it's over.
Yeah.
So by removing that liability, we hope actually to make retail more vibrant. It's going to take a massive change in the way that landlords think about stuff. And some of that will involve the repurposing of retail. But I don't envisage, you know, there is room for our model. We believe in every high street because it can flip between retail and amenity and event space and wellness and all the things that actually community really wants to see. There's no point having an H&M on your high street Monday through Thursday because it's an empty shop. But people do want to do some yoga. They do want to have a meeting space. Maybe the Cub Scouts could meet in a shop. Mm-hmm. You know, could this be the new town hall model? High streets are brilliantly served from perspective of infrastructure, accessibility. Let's use them, but let's just reimagine the way that we use them. And part of that is creating a fairer model to engage in those spaces, which is what we're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing I was really curious about is more, I guess, the technical side from what you do is how do you go about acquiring these prime retail spaces? Today, we are literally on the high street of Shoreditch. How do you land yourself in here?
Well, because we solve a problem for landlords, so yeah. We can generate, through a fractional leasing model, 3 to 5 times more revenue for the landlord than they would be getting through a rent.
Right.
So it's a no-brainer in some instances. I mean, it's worth saying that in some cases, that's not enough for the landlord. Because as I just mentioned, they love rent that's guaranteed for a decade,
yeah.
which we don't do. And so you're still coming up surveyors who have been through this groupthink process called the APC, mm-hmm. who just cannot be bothered to deal with us. But that's why, to your point about, you know, the pandemic and the other trials, this is the perfect moment to doing this, because people are thinking differently for the first time and having to act. Because a unit like this, if it's not occupied, is a liability. The landlords have to pay business rates. Yeah. So we're a way of mitigating that exposure and making cash, which in difficult times yeah. is great. For shopping center landlords, it's also brilliant to have something exciting.
Mm-hmm.
That's driving footfall, because footfall shops in adjacencies. It doesn't just come to enjoy whatever is going on in the souk. They go and buy a sandwich. You know, feet drive interest, the queue effect. You know, there is real benefit to the placemaking and community elements which we drive.
Yeah, for sure.
So we know you offer flexible terms for an obvious reason. If any retailers are listening now, what do these flexible terms look like? What's kind of the minimum you guys can do? Is there a sweet spot that you find?
No. I mean, we exist for you to engage with us on whatever terms work for you. Now, of course, what we try and do to protect our business is sell the high-value retail hours to the people that will pay the most money, and we do that as far into the distance as we can. Mm. That secures the landlord's happiness, which is important because they're taking all the risk in these spaces. And it also, you know, keeps our business afloat, which is important. It's tough times to be a startup at the moment. And then for anyone else, you know, anyone who wants to backfill in and around those bigger brands at the high value spaces, you know, you can book and design it. It's pretty much self-serve. For big brands, they can engage with our account managers who, you know, will do something a bit more bespoke for them and make sure that they're getting the service they need. But, you know, it isn't expensive. That's the point. You know, you could have any one of our sites for a week for thousands of pounds, not tens of thousands of pounds. If you are a really small local community user and you want to take low value hours to do something short term, it could be hundreds. So in that way, with much fairer engagement, which landlords are not set up to have because it's too much hassle for them, basically, we can satisfy all sorts of different people at all different times. And isn't that a fairer way of using all of these assets that lay empty? I mean, it's a scandal. 100,000 empty shops in the UK. There's got to be a better way to engage around them and to use big brands to make it financially viable so that smaller brands can use it the rest of the time.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, talking about the instability in the UK at the moment, shop closures, empty lots or empty retail space. How does this affect your business? I imagine that creates a new opportunity, but also how is that affecting the high street? If I walk up that street, am I going to see empty lots?
Yeah, I mean, vacancy is a problem because a vacant shop affects the unit next door in terms of its value, in terms of the desirability of the space. It changes the way that people are thinking about the economics of these shops. But it's also, you know, the more empty shops there are, frankly, the more need there is for us. I've had a lot of pushback, interestingly, from investors around, it's almost the sort of two opposing queries. One is defensibility. They're like, this is so obvious. Someone else is going to do it. What can you do to stop that? And I'm like, there's 100,000 empty shops. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a unicorn business with, you know, less than 200. I think this model will be copied, and I hope it is, because I hate empty shops. And there's, you know, if I was launching a shoe brand, you wouldn't be saying, oh, other people make shoes. But the corresponding bit of that is, oh, well, if the market's really bad, it's going to be so cheap to get shops that no one's going to need you. And I'm like, that presents a misunderstanding of really how expensive retail is, because rent is just like maybe maximum 30%. You've got to staff shops for 7 days a week. You've got to fit them out. All of the utilities, you know, in today's market, having a shop is incredibly expensive, and only a small fraction of that is occupational. So that's why the model is crumbling. Unfortunately, there are still both landlords out there and retailers out there who just want to keep doing what they've always done. And it will work out for some of them, but we're going to continue to see lots of big brand failures, unfortunately.
And are you, like, your strategy-wise, are you finding yourselves acquiring more places, for example, in London, or are you guys looking to acquiring places in more cities around the UK, or even, dare I ask, outside the UK?
Yeah. That again is a balancing act, because my masters are investors. You know, I have to keep this business afloat. Mm-hmm. And investors want to see scale and success. And it's such a chicken and egg, because to scale, you need to take some places that are going to be harder. Whereas to demonstrate success, you need to go to places where brands are like, hey, obviously I want to be there. So of course, Shoreditch, Oxford Street, South Molton Street, they're easy. You've got amazing site in Edinburgh. What we're seeing now is that brands are leading us and saying, we want to be in these locations, which is great because it's de-risks for us. Mm-hmm. And those locations are really interesting. They're market towns a lot more. And, you know, this is why the future of work plays into this massively. I just don't think London is the future for souk. But right now, because then landlords will be saying, well, you can only get yourself in market towns because in good locations, they don't want you, which is not true. Yeah. You know, there's so much vacancy everywhere. But I think the opportunity to help people be wherever the future of work in particular means people are going to be is super exciting and opportunistic, because those commuter towns are probably the short-term future. Mm-hmm. And I see actually that spreading much wider. You know, when people are obsessed with being within an hour of London, well, realistically now we're on this sort of 3-day-a-week cadence. You can live in Wales, yeah, and have a job in London. You can probably live in Barcelona,
yeah,
as you guys do.
Right, we definitely do. Yeah, you can do that.
So who knows how that plays out, which adds, you know, weight to my argument. Why on earth would you take a lease right now?
Yeah,
it's madness. Mm-hmm. Much better to have an agile model that we can provide you with.
Perfect. And I suppose wrapping this up, there's a question we like to ask everyone on the podcast, a little fun question, and that is, what is your favorite retail brand at the moment?
It's a bit biased because I was at some guys who I was at school with set it up, but I'm very loyal to Rag & Bone. I wear their jeans a lot. You know, when you just got that comfortable brand that you are, you know, it works for you. Mm-hmm. So having said that, I'm being unfaithful to them today.
I'm not wearing any.
Yeah. Just next door to them, it was an interesting brand called Nudie. So I've got some chinos from them. But yeah, Rag & Bone has been historically my go-to.
Nice. Well, that's interesting. It just proved your point of neighboring shops benefiting off how you went into Rag & Bone and then looked at the shop next door.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Brilliant.
So for anyone who's listening, any retailers, John, where can they go to find out more about what you guys do, get in touch with you if they're interested in your services?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're across all social media channels. We'll just go to souk.space. You can engage directly with our sales team there. And as I say, we can put together a strategy for anyone. You know, we're working with MasterCard, SumUp, TikTok, Radley, Depop at that sort of tier one level, but equally we're really proud of all of our relationships with a much, much smaller brand, some of whom are just starting out across beauty, across fashion, across wellness. We will put together a strategy that works for you. that is quite interesting. I think just quite a good example of how assumptions don't necessarily lead to the desired outcome. We did a brilliant activation with Quooker the other day, you know, the hot water tap, homeware, right?
Yep.
And they wanted to be on Oxford Street. They're the customer. They had Oxford Street. But in reality, it's probably not the right place for them. But what being on Oxford Street has taught them is that actually they probably will do better in Southampton. Or maybe even our Leeds store, or the one that is adjacent to the opening of an IKEA. And that's sort of the way that we are presenting Souq, and that hopefully will appeal to retailers listening to this, is that test and learn at a fraction of the cost of having to take a punt on a shop for hundreds, and probably, you know, depending on where you do it, maybe thousands of pounds, but not tens, not hundreds of thousands of pounds. You can see what location strategy works for you, because we've all got biases. We're all like, oh, I've got a fashion brand. I need to be on South Moulton Street Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
But that, what underpins that? Yeah. It is just gut feel. And our data-led approach, it actually will help you to make better decisions and benchmark against the success of other brands to ultimately sell your product in the most cost-effective way.
Yeah.
Minimum effort. Maximum bang for your buck.
Awesome.
Exactly. So I'd just like to say, you know, while we wrap this up, thanks again for coming on. It's been a while. We've been trying to get this in place. Really happy that you guys are sponsoring the second season. Super excited for all the brands we're going to speak to. And obviously they'll find out about Souq as well, which is really exciting for you guys. So.
Thanks for having me.
Perfect. Thanks, John. Have a good one.
WTF is Retail, presented by Excellent Zephyr, your ERP, integration, and automation specialists.